Ever dreamt about hitting the road with your kids and heading out back? Today, homeschooling mum Lisa Crompton tells us about what and how she did just that whilst road schooling her own children.
Welcome to Raising Wildlings, a podcast about parenting, alternative education, and stepping into the wilderness, however that looks, with your family.
Each week, we'll be interviewing experts that truly inspire us to answer your parenting and education questions. We'll also be sharing stories from some incredible families that took the leap and are taking the road less travelled.
We're your hosts, Vicky and Nikki from Wildlings Forest School. Pop in your headphones, settle in, and join us on this next adventure.
Hello and welcome to the Raising Wildlings podcast. I'm your host, Nikki Farrell. One of the best parts of hosting this podcast is the people that we've met online. Today's guest, Lisa Crompton, is just one of them. Lisa is a mother to two gorgeous kids who are naturally learning without school. They live on Kaurna land in the Adelaide Hills and since COVID have been travelling Australia by road at every opportunity they get. Lisa actually contacted us by Facebook, letting us know that she'd been enjoying our podcast and that she'd been road schooling her kids through the outback of South Australia and the Nullarbor and was hoping to connect with us if she ever got up to Queensland for her next trip. Well, the photos of her outback trip really caught our eye and we asked her if she'd like to join us on the podcast to tell us all about road schooling and how it worked for her family. But before we start, don't forget to check out our free downloadables at wildlingsforestschool.com/free-downloadables. You might like to check out our wild schooling car checklist to help make it easier to get you and your own wildlings out on the road. But for now, we're actually going to jump straight into the middle of the conversation that Lisa and I were having. I have to be honest, Lisa and I got chatting straight away and both of us can talk with a mouthful of marbles. So we didn't actually do an intro for this podcast. And instead of stopping our conversation that was going so well, I actually just hit record. So to fill you in, we were talking about the differences between Queensland and South Australia with the documentation requirements for homeschoolers. And I have just quickly, as you're about to hear now, I quickly pause her for a second and hit record so that she could explain that and keep her train of thought. So this will be a little bit disjointed, but the conversation flows really smoothly from now on. So thank you for your patience. Thank you for understanding that, you know, we're homeschooling mums and we record in a little sunroom in a Queenslander and half the time we're not sure we know what we're doing, but gosh, we enjoy it and we're so glad that you're here along the ride. Enjoy.
Right, okay, but you pass, right?
Yeah, and this is the thing is that I shouldn't say we're terrible. I think I feel terrible because coming from teaching where everything is so heavily documented compared to unschooling, but it'd be nice for people to, I think we've touched on it somewhere, I can't think where, but it would be really awesome, A, if you could tell us about how SA, what South Australia needs for registration and then what you do to document. That would be incredible.
Oh yeah, and what do they exactly want? That is a good question. See, I can't succinctly let you know exactly what they're after, but I can generally.
Well, and if you don't, you know, that's fine. We just avoid it. Like I've been avoiding it for 50 something years.
No, I'm happy. Give it a crack.
Yeah, but I think it's the essence though. I think it's just showing people over and over again that it can be done. Like whether we can articulate it perfectly doesn't actually matter. It's that I was scared once. I didn't think I'd be able to do it, but, you know, the reports are getting through, so obviously it's okay.
Yeah, same. Yeah.
And it doesn't help that Vicky and I are teachers because everyone always says, oh, yeah, but you're a teacher. But the reporting's so different. It's so different and so much easier. So,
yeah. It's not.
I think it'd be great.
It's not a grave that we're, yeah. Yeah. Okay, cool. All right. So I was just wondering because even when I, you know, when I first started out and I was looking at podcasts, I wanted to know about that. You know, when you ask them, but tell me that, tell me the nitty gritty, like how do you do that? Tell me how they actually, I was really thirsty and I don't know, you know, maybe this is something, you know, you might want to consider, but maybe it's just me. But I've trailed through podcasts before looking for mathematics in unschooling, looking for English in unschooling. I get it now, but it's taken nearly 3 years, you know. But I just wanted to hear, and I still am interested, you know, and I've listened to podcasts where there's professor, mathematic professors saying, I don't think kids need to be taught math in school. Like, I mean, I know that's one person's opinion, but I agree. I get what they're saying, you know?
Yeah. And especially up in those upper levels. I've heard that multiple times from multiple people saying that, like, year 11 and 12, unless you're going to pursue an academic career in it, then don't worry about it.
Yeah, exactly. Because maths is, and maths is happening all the time, and you wouldn't know that if you were making your kids do mathematics and they didn't have that time to, you know, just live and do maths, you know, and you didn't have the time to observe them just learning mathematics, you know, in everyday life. Mm. But I see it happening all the time and I'm like, my kids know stuff, you know. How did my seven-year-old kid who I've never sat down and done times tables with or made him do addition or sat there with little blocks and, you know, said this is tens and this is 20s, you know, he's in the playground and he's like, you know, mum, you know, I'm selling water, I'm selling 1,000 litres of water, and then when I say, well, I only want half of that amount, that's too much, and he's like, oh, well, I'll give you 500 litres of water then. So how did you know that? How did you know that? Like, I didn't, and he's not gifted, you know, like he's just an ordinary kid.
Because it's everywhere. We just, if they're exposed to the world and the world that we live in, you can't help unless you've got learning difficulties or, you know, or learning disabilities, then you'll naturally pick it up.
Well, but yeah, it's a living example of it. And it blows me away. It blows me away a lot, actually. You know,
Yeah, it does just, me too. It still gobsmacks me sometimes what comes out of their mouths. I'm like, but
how did you know that? Where did you learn that? And then, you know, and then I have to sit down and I have to, you know, pick away when it comes to review time and actually describe how my kids have learned all this stuff. You know, I'm like, well, I know.
Do you want to talk about that then while we're on that roll?
Yeah.
So talk to us about how you record your homeschooling when you unschool and road school, because like we were saying earlier, that was probably the thing that was the biggest block and stumped us the most when both of us were looking to homeschool our kids.
Yeah, it's no different for me really than being at home, because we don't learn in some different way when we're at home and then we learn differently on the road. I just believe that my children are learning all the time. So I don't have maths books to pull off the shelf to show and prove that my children know how to, you know, do division or they know how to do their times tables. I don't.
Mm.
But what I do have in everyday life is I have these little conversations that, you know, that pop up with my kids, and you know, it might be that we're in a fruit and veggie store and my daughter's wanting like a bag full of organic peaches, and I'm like, well, that's really expensive. Okay, you know, you can $8 worth, you know, can you go and weigh them and can you figure out $8 worth?
Mm.
You know, and she likes to do that, and she doesn't. She figures it out, and I get on with my shopping, and she goes over to the scales, and you know, maybe she needs a hand. But you know, that's mathematics in the living moment. And the unfortunate thing that I do have to do is, at the end of the day, I don't do this all the time, and I'm doing it less and less, which is making my reviewing a little bit harder for myself. But I record that moment. I record what happened in that moment and I write it down, and, you know, sometimes I put a little visual with it if I've got a picture of our day of what's going on, and then I pick out the mathematics in that so that I can, you know, I can tell the homeschool officer when they come and they review me, I can tell them this is what we've done. This is an example of how my kids are learning. And it's okay. That's actually, that's fine. they're happy for that. It takes a lot more work on my behalf. It would be a lot easier if I could just pull off a book from the shelf going, like, here's your three mathematics. We did this whole book, bang. But I can't. So it just takes a little bit of extra work on my behalf. And my kids don't know that I'm doing that. And I'm glad for that, because it's an unnatural process as far as I'm concerned, having to make these records through them just living naturally. But that's okay. That's what I have to do.
Yeah, when you, just to clarify, and this is really helpful for people that have no idea about it, do you have any tips or tricks for your recording? Do you have a spreadsheet? Yeah. Do you just have a notebook? Like, how do you keep your stuff organized so you can do the report? Let's backtrack even further. In SA, I don't know if it's different to Queensland, what do you have to submit at the end of the year for, here it's a home education unit, I don't know what it is in
South Australian Home Education Department. Yeah, so we get reviewed once a year, and we have mm-hmm. someone come to our house and they can see where we're living, how we live. We do have to fill in and answer questions for every subject of the curriculum and how we are addressing mm-hmm. that with our kids. So I have to do that for each child. It ends up being pages and pages and pages of documentation, and mm-hmm. what I do throughout the year to keep a record, because again, I don't have lots of hard copy, you know, I don't have textbooks to show them, or, you know, folders of, you know, written work that my children have done. I often, you know, I'll take photos. So if we're out and about, I'm always taking photos anyway. So I've always got my phone with me. So if we're at an event or an excursion or just something happens in the day, I might just, you know, we might be playing Monopoly and there might just be some really, you know, amazing learning that I can see going on, and I'll just take a photo. And then at the end of the week or end of the day, I'll go through my photos and it will trigger, oh, yeah, that's right, we did that. And I record, I actually have set up for myself and just my husband a group on Facebook where mm-hmm. I will pop up a photo of a learning experience, and then I will take out all the learning subjects that we covered with that learning experience. And there's so many. There usually is so many that come up in one. It's crazy.
Oh, it's crazy.
I remember there being 14 on one amazing. It was an Aboriginal trail that we walked on that had all these art installations in the Adelaide Hills, and the children got taught. They saw dancing. They got taught language. They were taught how to cook traditionally a fish in clay, and they just engaged in so much of the learning criteria. It was amazing. And I think in the beginning when we first started unschooling, for me, it really comforted me, because I was able to go, wow, they are actually learning. I'm actually ticking all these boxes and this is amazing. Mm. So I write it down on this Facebook page. And then when it comes to our review, I'm able to word search, so I can tap in English or I can tap in language, and everything that we've done
just
comes up and I can revisit it, and I can write about it, and I can talk about it. It refreshes my memory. And that's how I do it. Everybody does it differently, but that's what works best for me.
Perfect. I love that that's attached to photos, and too, because like you said, they do need evidence sometimes, and I think that's probably the hardest thing as unschoolers, that we know that we're doing it and we know that they're learning, but because that's there's not right. the textbooks or the written work, sometimes the only thing Absolutely. We have is images, and then how we store those so we're not going through 20,000 photos at the end of the year. That's Absolutely. A genius idea.
Yeah, and I mean, lesson. Even my daughter might write a letter to, you know, to a friend, or they might do a birthday card, and we don't keep that because it gets passed on, or a postcard. So, you know, I just quickly take a photo of it, and, you know, that there's some writing, there's some English, and a photo, you know, it works perfectly.
All right, let's get chatting about your trip out back. So first of all, let's, I guess, let's pretend it's pre-COVID. What was your week like? Really, we'll just do it really briefly. What was a typical week like for your family activity-wise, and then what changed, and then what was the, you know, the straw that broke the camel's back to go, right, we're out of here?
We have a beautiful community here that we, in the Adelaide Hills, that we catch up with on a weekly basis and, you know, several times a week in some cases. And all of a sudden, when COVID hit, all the excursions, all the regular activities like chess class, ballet, you know, those sort of things, they were all cancelled, and we were at home and we're thinking, what happened now and what's going to happen? And we're watching what was going on in Italy and up in China and places around the world, and it was really scary. And I didn't know if that was going to be us next. And, yeah, so I was, it felt a little bit like staring our own mortality in the face. So it was like, you know, is this going to be us soon? I feel claustrophobic at the thought of being locked into my house, even though we live on a property. So that, for me, was a trigger. I thought, right, we've got nothing on. We've got nothing to answer to. Let's go away. My husband couldn't, because with his work it just got even busier with the whole COVID thing. And I thought, okay, we can't leave South Australia because all the borders were locked. It's winter. It's coming into winter. Where can we go? Where can we go? I'm going to take the kids on the Uber to the track. I don't know where that came from.
I love it. For those of you, especially our global listeners that have never heard of the Oonadatta track, there's a saying in Australia that is like whoop whoop, which is nowhere, which is the middle of desert.
Nowhere. It really is. And I've always wanted to do it. And the big dream is to, as a family, get in the car, take the caravan, travel around Australia. It's not happening anytime in the near future because my husband, he can't at the moment, so it's not the right timing for us. And all of a sudden I thought, oh, my gosh, we just got to do everything we can and just get out there and get the kids away from all this COVID talk. It was really distressing for them and me. And going out into Whoop Whoop felt like a really good idea. And you know what? And it was great. And my neighbour, she has two homeschool children as well. And I said to her, hey, what do you think? We're going 2 weeks. Do you want to come? We're going to go. I'm going to go with or without you. And silently really hoping she was going to come with me, because I was really scared, but I was determined. And she said, yeah, I'll come. So we all piled in my car. It was 4 kids and 2 adults. It was jam-packed. Yeah.
So good. This must have been so full.
We had one kid in the boot in a chair, of course, but it folds out. There's a chair in there, and then 3 in the back, and then her and I, and we attached the cage trailer to the car with the biggest esky you've ever seen, and we had a fridge in my car, and we literally packed enough food for 2 weeks. So yeah, and
nice.
We took as little as we could, but we took heaps of water and we took heaps of food, and we just went. And it was the best thing, and it just ignited something in me, and I was like, we have to keep doing this. This was amazing. I can do this. It was so empowering. And crazy,
yes. Yeah,
to be doing that on my first trip, on my own.
You did it properly. If you're going to do it, why not go all out? Oonadatta, no husbands, no other cars to pull you out in case you get bogged, broken down.
Yeah, and to paint
so
a picture,
good.
I mean, there was no one out there because all the borders were closed, and
eerie.
We passed maybe 4 cars in about 20 hours of driving. I'm not joking. It was crazy. There was just no one, hardly anyone out there at all.
Wow.
Yeah.
Were there any perks to that?
Oh, to having no one out there, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, we went up to the top of South Australia as far as we could in the desert, and went to a place called Dalhousie Springs, which is even more remote than Oonadatta Track.
Stunning.
And it was on the edge of the Simpson Desert, and we had the entire place. It was a hot spring. It's around about 40 degrees in the water, and we had the whole campground and the hot spring to ourselves for 24 hours, which is apparently unheard of.
I was going to say, I went probably with my family as a kid camping, so let's say 30 years ago, and it was not like that then.
There you go. It was busy.
It was. I mean, it wasn't like it would be now, but it was still a very known tourist spot even then.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so we had it to ourselves, which was incredible. Yeah.
So good. How did you go with the homeschooling on the road?
Well, I don't differentiate schooling with life, so it just continued to happen. The children were learning new things all the time. We met some amazing people. We met an Aboriginal elder called Uncle Reg. Reg Dodd, he's an Arabana elder from Murray, which is on the Oonadatta Track. And when we got to Murray, we found Reg, and he offered to take us out onto the Oonadatta Track and up to Lake Eyre.
Oh, wow.
And told the children his dreaming stories of the area. Took them to Mountain Springs. He sung to them. He told them the dreaming stories. He took us to places where only he had permission to go, so off the beaten track. And we walked on ground in the middle of Australia that millions of years ago used to be covered by sea. And my children found fossilized cockle shells the size of two of your palms put together.
Wow, that's huge.
Amazing, incredible. This stuff was everywhere, and my children are picking this up and finding it on the ground, and he's telling them about it, and he's teaching them how to tread softly on the land and, you know, tidy your tracks and make it, you know, respect the land.
Beautiful.
There's learning. I mean, learning that in a book and then learning it and feeling it, seeing it and smelling it is just something else that they will never forget.
No, isn't it? It's that connections to real people, and real compassion and real understanding, isn't it? So important.
And connection to the land, yeah, absolutely. Mm. So these are the experiences that we have when we go to them and we get outside and we live it.
So amazing. How did you, because I know this will be a question we'll get asked, is, you know, two women on your own, one vehicle, what kind of things did you do to make yourselves feel safe out in the road?
You know, it's funny. Before I left, I had, I was nervous, to be honest. I was. But once we were out there, I felt so safe. I mean, there was no one out there. there was no one there. And I felt that as long as we had enough water and enough food, that we'd be okay. And I always made sure we told someone where we were going. So the biggest danger, I guess, was probably, you know, breaking down and not seeing anyone because there was no one passing by. But as long as someone knew where we were supposed to be, and if we didn't turn up, that we were probably between A and B, then I felt okay with that.
Yeah.
And we had enough supplies for like a week.
Perfect. So, how was your signal out there?
None. I didn't have a signal out there. I didn't have signal out there, and I'm going to probably be judged for this, but I didn't have any devices.
Sounds amazing.
And I had to actually, when we went out to Dalhousie, which was it was about a 4-hour drive towards the desert. I told a roadhouse that we were going out there. And he asked me, he said, okay, I need to know how many days do you plan on being out there? And I said, 3. And he goes, okay, well, if you haven't reported back to me in 4 days, I'll send a light plane out looking for you.
Oh.
Yeah. And he had my husband's phone number and my husband had his phone number. So if no one had heard from us, they knew that there was something wrong. So that was our fallback plan. Everything went well. But I must say, after that trip, I have invested, because we're going to keep traveling,
mm-hmm.
I have invested in a satellite device,
mm-hmm.
So that if we are ever really remote and something happens there, I have satellite communication. I have a button on there that I can just press and a helicopter will come no matter where I am.
Yeah, perfect. The EPIRBs. They're amazing. Isn't it? How amazing is technology when we need it? It really, it's unbelievable. And can I just say a big thank you to the roadhouse attendant, because that's not something he has to do or offer that service. You know, again, he's a human and he cares for other humans. And if we all just cared for other humans,
the world would be such a better place. Yeah, I mean, the people are the country people. They always say they're friendly. They are. And that's a big roadhouse of Noonda Data. And it's just, amazing, right? Yeah.
Mm.
So meeting these beautiful people, it was just, and that's all we met. When we are travelling, we just meet lovely people.
Mm.
Yeah.
How did the kids go? You took other kids. So I was going to say, how did the kids go entertaining themselves? But you brought the biggest entertainment.
Another set of kids. One each.
Genius.
Yeah, exactly. That is the trick, I think, in traveling, always going with some more kids. It helps with the bickering. Oh, it's amazing, you know. When we used to travel, I used to make sure I had all these colouring in books and dot to dots, and I had movies and I had all this entertainment, travel board games to play in the car. They don't do any of it. They might 10 minutes. They really don't. They look out the window and they just look, because it's amazing and it's beautiful. And they listen to, they might listen to podcasts. But sometimes they sit in the car for hours. Sometimes we really need to get somewhere, and that might be 5-6 hours in the car.
Mm.
And they're okay with that. I always ask them, are you okay? Yeah, fine. And they're really happy just to look out the window. It's amazing, really. We think kids need to be entertained all the time, but they really don't.
I read an article somewhere. They were talking about kids and free time and how little free time they have, and they said long gone are the days where children could look outside the window as they drove somewhere and process and just think and let their brains imagine and daydream. So our kids just don't even have the daydreaming time that they used to have, or that time to process emotions or things that have happened in the day, because, you know, I'm guilty for it. I always shove a book in their hands or something else. But like you said, more often than not, they put the book down and stare out the window.
They really do. They really do. And the only way I can relate to that is when I'm driving these long distances. You know, people say, oh, that's so far to drive. I find, especially driving the outback, it's almost meditative for me. I mean, I'm not getting sleepy behind the wheel, but I just am invigorated by the beauty and the nothingness and the large sky, the 180 degree large sky, and blue sky at that. And my son says the same thing. I love the desert, Mum. I love it. I love it out here. Can we live out here? No, really. But it's beautiful. It's relaxing. And I enjoy driving and doing that. And they enjoy it too.
I think it's so I did similar trips when I was a kid with my family, and it's funny, I haven't camped in a swag again for, gosh, at least 10 years. You know, we've been in tents and whatnot, but just this, I've just come back from Lennox Heads with Vicky and another friend, and we just threw swags in. And when I laid down the first night and I laid down and all I could see was the stars, I just had this huge sense of safety and of being a child again, and wrapped up so warm in my snug swag and eyes up at the sky. And that's not the outback sky. I've never seen blue skies or starry skies like I've seen in the outback.
Zero light pollution. there's something about that.
It really is. So it just gives me hope that, you know, even if it is 30 years later or 40 years later, that our kids will get that same sense of, oh, gosh, I was loved, and, oh, gosh, you know, we had some special times when we were kids doing these things and having spending time as a family, because it's getting harder and harder to do where we're not taking trips that are all about entertainment. You know, we're going to the theme parks, or we're going to go and do something, whereas I think with these trips there's so much time to just be and get to know ourselves as a family again.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And they, look, my kids would, you know, they would love the theme parks. They really want to come to Queensland and go to Movie World.
Nothing wrong with them.
But there's just something, about just being out there and just seeing a camel train. You know, walking across the desert, or, you know, all of a sudden, I mean, you know, one of the highlights my daughter keeps telling is we were on a girls' trip, just her and I, and we were driving the Nullarbor, and she really wanted to see a thorny devil lizard.
Oh.
And I was driving, and they're tiny, but I saw this weird shape on the road, and I thought, I reckon that might have been it. And I stopped the car and turned around and went back. It was. We got out and we watched it cross the road, and we checked him out, and amazing, you know. And, you know, just those little moments. You can't drive to them. They just got to happen.
No, so true, isn't it? Like, you can go and see a thorny devil at the zoo somewhere sometimes, but it's not the same, is it?
It's not the same. It's not the same. It's just when there's that surprise and, you know, feel of adventure about it, and it stays in their memory,
So I forgot about the Nullarbor trip. Tell us about the Nullarbor. So again, for our global listeners, the Nullarbor has the longest, straightest stretch of road in Australia.
That's right.
It's the start. The Nullarbor Plain is actually not far from where I grew up, on the west coast of the Eyre Peninsula in South Australia. Tell us all about that.
Yeah, it means treeless plain.
it's not lying.
Well, I'm just gonna fill you in on something. There are a few trees on there, and when you see, go, hang on,
why? Yeah.
The Nullarbor. So last year we did the Nullarbor. Oh, believe it or not, we did it. So this is 2020. Mm-hmm. We went halfway across and then got stopped because of bushfires, and came back and went to Streaky Bay.
My stomping ground.
Yeah, your hometown. We love your hometown, Streaky Bay. So we stayed there for a week until the fires cleared. Then we went over all the way to WA.
Can't believe you went back.
And then we came back a few weeks later. And then in September, we because the whales migrated, and that wasn't happening when we drove across at Christmas time. So my daughter really wanted to see the whales, and we had a week up our sleeve, and I said, let's go. My son didn't want to come, so he stayed at home with Dad and Nanny, and my daughter and I got in the car, and we drove out to the whales. It took us 2 days to get out to the Nullarbor, and we saw them, and she sat there and she painted them and drew them, and we watched them for hours, and it was amazing. And
girls,
we had the best
trip.
Time. It was a girls' trip. We slept in a swag on the Nullarbor, and the entire night we had a dingo bitch scratching around our tent. It was incredible. It didn't feel unsafe, but to be honest, I knew there was something around the swag all night. I sensed it, and I could hear it. And we had another traveller say that it was scratching around our swag all night. So anyway, that was amazing. So we did that. We couldn't go over the Western Australian border because it was closed at the time. So we came back and we explored more of Western Outback South Australia, Hiltipa and the Gawler Ranges.
My friends used to own Hiltipa Station.
No, didn't they?
Yeah, good family friends. They're beautiful people. That was a long, long time ago. They sold up a long time before we left. So,
I've been out there. You need to come back and see these places.
Well, we're hoping to do a family road trip Christmas or around swimming lessons in January, the annual, such a South Australian thing. I don't know if this happens Australia-wide, but 2 weeks every year in country swim remote back. Beaches. Yeah, yes. Swim back. Yes. Back swim. Yes. We go and do 2 weeks of swimming lessons in the jellyfish infested Southern Ocean.
Oh, so you want to take your kids to relive that experience that you had.
That I hated, isn't it funny? I hated parts of it as a young kid, but as I got older, it's not even the swimming lessons, it's the fact that every farmer and his dog and family are down at the beach then, so it's a great time to catch up with everyone and show them all the great spots that we got to hang out with as kids, because it's still my soul place. Like if someone asked me, you know, go to your soul place, where is it when you meditate that you think of? Mine is St. Mary's Rock Pool and Squeaky Beach at Point Brown near Smoky Bay. So I've lived here. I haven't been there. I'll give you the local details another day. But, you know, I've been here 15 years and that's still, like, it's left such an imprint being raised there. So I think, again, that's just that reminder to us that it's so important for our kids to have access to those nature places and to feel like they have a sense of place in a nature space somewhere.
Yeah.
Whether it's your backyard or not, it doesn't matter, but somewhere that they can go to, whether that's in their mind or when they're having a rough day, that they can go and just find some peace. I think it's so important.
Yeah, I agree. Mm. Yeah.
It's definitely undervalued tourist destination, the Eyre Peninsula. It's so magical. The beaches are, you know, deserted and stunning.
They are amazing. Don't tell anybody.
What are we doing?
I know. Oh goodness. The weather's not for the faint hearted. You can have a 42 degree day one day and then you can have 21 the next and high winds. I mean, I've never seen winds anything like it. you got to be good at adapting. It's pretty rugged.
It certainly is. And I still can't believe that our farmers survive there. My dad's a farmer there and I just think, you know, he won't put a dollar in the pokies, but essentially you're gambling there as a farmer. It's just such a, you know, Mother Nature's in control there. So hats off to all our farmers putting bread and beer on our tables because it's not an easy way to carve a living.
No, that's right. No, not at all.
Mm. So what else, homeschooling-wise, is there any tips or advice that you'd like to give families that are maybe, you know, just questioning whether they could do it or wanting to dip their toe in but are just a bit worried about it?
I believe most people have a big misconception about what homeschooling is.
Mm.
In fact, I didn't even quite get it when we began homeschooling, and until you start living it and de-schooling yourself out of thinking that you can only learn by being fed information in a classroom. I think it's fantastic. I don't know what advice to give. If you're on the fence, do your homework. Listen to these podcasts. That's what really inspires me, is listening to podcasts like you and Vicky. I think they're amazing. They really give a really good true insight into homeschooling. And I think my question when we started is I would ask these unschoolers, I would say, tell me, what do you do every day? And no one really answered me. And I go back to these same friends and I say, ask you these questions. And it was like a bit of a, well, blah, 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 I want a cup of tea. It was like, nobody really answered my question. I never really got a good picture as to, you know, how are your kids learning? And I think a lot of people feel judged because we're going against the grain by not doing a curriculum. And perhaps looking like we don't agree with how, you know, the next person is educating their child by putting them in school. I mean, I don't care how somebody educates their child. That's up to them. But there are so many ways to learn. There are so many ways to learn. And you can do that with your children however you wish. And that is probably actually not comforting to a lot of people. because they go, wow, well, I don't know how to do that. I'm not a teacher. Well,
yeah,
you don't need to be. You, as a parent, you're a teacher. Everyone's a teacher. We're all teachers to our children, actually.
Mm-hmm.
But there is just so much help out there now. There is, we have the internet. My goodness. You know, wow. I mean, there are programs set up for children to learn anything they wanted to learn. I like OutSchool is amazing resource. American company that just, honestly, give me a topic. They'll have it on there. If you want to learn about rabbits, they'll have a course on rabbits. My daughter came to me last week and said, Mum, I want to learn about herbs and how they make people well again. We've had a bit of sickness in the family. We've had the flu and chickenpox go through recently. And
poor
she said,
thing. You've had it a lot.
I know, right? We haven't, yeah, we've had the double whammy after not being sick for over a year. But I've been giving herbs to the children and she wants to learn about it. And I got online and I've found a course, wildcrafting. And how to use herbs and how they heal. There's something for everyone. There's help so out there. Good.
Is that course with my Heidi Marika by any chance?
I don't know.
We've got a woman here locally who sells a book called Wildcraft and she's a herbalist. So I wonder if it's the same one.
No, this lady's in America.
Nice.
This lady's in America and she's running the course for an age group around about, I think, 8 years to 11 or something like that. And then she doesn't, yeah, no, this lady's in America. So it's an online thing.
Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah, so there is so much help out there. There are, you know, there are communities. There's so many of us. You know, someone said to me the other day, the homeschoolers are the biggest school in Australia. There's so many of us.
And when you put it like that.
and it's growing every year. It's growing, I know in South Australia, by about 14% last year and continuing at that rate. So there are a lot of us out there. We don't walk around with, you know, big signs on our head saying we're a homeschooler, but there's lots of us out there and just waiting to welcome new people into the fold and share the journey.
I love that. That's a great way, I think, to end and to move on to our rapid fire questions. It is. There's so much out there and the internet is your best friend and your community is your best friend because we wouldn't survive without, I shouldn't say we wouldn't survive, it would be a lot harder without the internet, but it would be near impossible without our community, I think.
Yes, that's right. Absolutely agree with you. Yeah.
All right, are you ready for some rapid fire questions?
Righto, throw them at me.
Excellent. All right, here we go. What is your favorite book of all time and why, or what are you currently reading?
Okay, so I'm not a big reader, I'm not going to go with what I'm reading at the moment.
But
my favorite book probably the most influential book on me of all time would be Parenting for a Peaceful World. By the one and only Robin Grill. And I think I read that book at the perfect time. I just had my first child and parenting started to look very different to me to what I thought it was going to be. And I read this book about how parenting customs shaped whole societies, you know, around the world throughout the ages. So interesting how whole societies or, say, a whole country might just practice the same parenting technique without question, you know, and how that really affected, you know, outcome of, you know, the children and when they were adults and how it affected how they were and how they saw the world and interacted with it. So that was a real eye-opening book for me.
We briefly touched on this when we first spoke to each other before the podcast and I asked you, and I think I'd like to ask again, Was that the book that got you into attachment parenting, and did attachment parenting mm-hmm. happen to lead you down the rabbit hole to homeschooling? Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah, I think yes, I think so. I went into parenting having my first child, and I was going to breastfeed for a year. I was going to have a year off work, and then I was going to get back to work as fast as possible. It seems to be the thing. We'll say like 10 years ago.
Where do we get that message from?
I think it's because maternity leave is for 1 year.
Yeah, actually, you're spot
I think
on.
That dictates it a lot. I think finding countries, however long their maternity leave is, dictates when the women go back to work. So that's where I think we get that from. And that's what I said. In fact, I had a newborn baby and I was still turning on my computer after that baby went to sleep, that two-month-old baby went to bed, and after barely sleeping myself, and I'd be doing some work on the side, and I don't know what I was trying to prove. I think I was just trying to prove I could do it all. Anyway, reading this book, that just, you know, yes, it did lead me on into attachment parenting, because I started to question the narrative of how we were, how people were doing this, you know, and why our mothers, I did not feel right for me to leave my child at 1 year of age. And it doesn't mean that it's not okay for the next person, but for me, it didn't feel right. And I started to notice that, you know, I was a bit different to other people, found my attachment parenting group, which is, you know, a lot of that was, you know, extended breastfeeding. We all did a lot of that, sleeping with our children, all these things I thought I'd never do.
And same.
It just made, right? And it just made me question everything. I started to question everything because it was about my children now. It wasn't about me. So just going along with the crowd, well, you know, I had to question, you know, everything about that. Is that the right thing for my child? And
It's that respectful communication, isn't it? And it comes back to almost consent about, well, do they want to sit down for 6 hours? Do they want to learn about dinosaurs when actually they're really interested in gum trees? You know, I know I'm really oversimplifying it, but it really does come back to honouring the individual.
But, yeah, that's right.
I heard Lucy Aiken-Reed have a quote this week about wondering if we've entered this third generation of unschooling where we're no longer about, you know, just sovereignty and individualism at perhaps the harming of our community. It's quite the opposite. I feel like we're now, through this attachment parenting, we are raising individuals absolutely and honouring that sovereignty, but we're creating these communities that can also honour each other's differences and celebrate them. So, gosh, I hope that's, it sounds good. Sounds amazing.
I saw that. I follow Lucy Aiken-Reed, and I resonate a lot with what she says. And
same. Let's keep building that community of individual community builders.
That's right.
All right. Number two. Where do you go, or what do you do to reset after a rough day?
You know what? I knew you were going to ask me this question because you told me.
Because you listened to the podcast.
Thank you for preparing. Yeah, for allowing me to prepare my answer. And I asked my husband, I said, what do I do to relax after or reset after a hard day? And he said, you go into the butler's pantry on your phone and drink a glass of wine. I'm just going to keep it real. I don't drink the whole bottle, but I do often do that. That is my happy place in the house where there's nowhere else to go. No, but so also I aim on creating a lifestyle with my family that I feel like I don't need to escape from. But, of course, I have those days, as we all do, and, look, that's when I call for help, you know. My husband, number one, can you come home from work early? Can you give me some time? You know, and or I on the weekends, you know, if I need it, he'll take the kids out and they'll go have a good time and I just have some quiet time. But I also find those moments within my day. So, you know, I'm homeschooling, but I'm not in my kids' faces every minute of the day. And in fact, my kids are in the other room at the moment, and they're quite happily getting on with whatever they feel that they want to do. And they haven't bothered me at all. Yeah. So I get those moments. And if I really need it, if I'm feeling unwell, if it's that time of the month, I'll say, kids, I'm going to have a sleep.
Yeah.
Because that's what I need right now. And I feel that. By doing that, I'm also showing them to honour their own feelings and look after themselves too, because that's important. That's learning. Oh,
you know, I just literally got off the phone recording a podcast with Lucy Peach, period queen, before I got on the phone with you.
Yeah, okay.
And she was talking exactly that. She said, if we communicate our needs, particularly to our children, then we're teaching them that they can ask for things as well, and they can
that's
ask
right.
for help and show them what self-care looks like. So
yeah,
well
that's
done.
Right. Hey, I do that a lot. I've rolled one of that.
Yeah, and I can
because of our lifestyle.
I think you hit the nail on the head there. I think a lot of people think that when you homeschool, because a lot of people enter homeschool or start thinking about it when their kids are about to enter school, and, you know, they're still quite needy at that age. But, you know, my kids are 6 and 9, and how old are yours now?
Mine are 11 and just 9,
Yeah, and I not that I don't see them, I obviously do see them, but they don't need me. I help them with food every now and then, and if they need help or they want me to read to them, then, yes, I'll do that. But I'm certainly not, like you said, in their face all day. There's a lot of... A lot of time in a day when I can get my space and self-care if I need to.
Agree, absolutely.
All right, number three, our loaded question. If you had to choose just one thing to change about the education system, what would it be?
Goodness. Okay, so this is something I must say I don't really think too much about anymore.
It's funny, isn't it, because I'm the same.
I don't need to solve that problem anymore because my children are in school. And just to let people know, I did have my kids in school for one child was 2 years, the other one was, you know, 6 months. So and it didn't work out well. I didn't like what I was seeing from that. So that is such a big question. I can't think of any one thing that trumps another.
Let's what was the straw that broke the camel's back for you to leave school then, if there was one? I'm sure it's always never just one, but
it wasn't just one thing. You're right. It was my daughter had been in school for two and a half years and I was just seeing it became normal for her every night for about an hour and a half at bedtime to download about the it started to become a very toxic social interactions were going on at school because these kids had to see each other every day, you know, 5-6 hours a day, and she, you know, these toxic social structures start to form, and that was really worrying for me, but didn't seem to be enough for me to pull her out. But then when my son went to school, he was just so anxious. He was worried about doing the wrong thing. He did everything right, held himself together. The teacher said he was her dream student because he did everything she said. And then when I'd pick him up and he'd get in the car at the end of the day, he would just ask me what was for dinner. Doesn't matter what I said. It's the first thing he asked me. I would say it was his favourite meal. It was sausages and mash or whatever. And he would just start crying and saying, no, I don't want that. I don't want that. And it would go on for an hour or an hour and a half every night. And I just started to think, hang on, this is not about the sausages and mash.
No, it is not.
It isn't. It is not. This is not okay. We made a decision one Tuesday night. I just said to him, you know, he started to wet the bed. He started to have night terrors. You know what's going on here? There was nothing really that was going on. There was no bullying or anything like that. It was just really stressful for him to be in this environment where he had to obey the rules that he actually said to me, Mum, how can I possibly know all the rules that there are in the school? I was like, good question. And so I said, do you want to go to school anymore? And he said, no, I don't. I said, you never have to go back to school again. End of story. Tuesday night, you're not going tomorrow. That's it, done. And then I was homeschooling. I did not surprise. Know. Oh, my goodness, surprise. I did not know what to do with myself. I just thought, wow, what have I done? How do I do this? So anyway, it was a blessing in disguise because I'd never considered homeschooling before when I was considering what school to put my children into. It was never a consideration. I think it should be. I really think it should be. It's not just the alternate for when school isn't working out. It's a lifestyle. It's one that offers, it is a privileged lifestyle, I must say. It is one that means that one person has to work and the other one can't. And we don't get funding in Australia to homeschool. We don't get
She's
help.
Crazy.
No,
the money goes
funding.
To a school. Yeah, exactly.
It does. But we don't get any of those benefits. I think we get a $50 sports voucher once a year. But I think it really it should be a consideration when you're lining up. How am I going to educate my child? Is it going to be mainstream, Steiner, Montessori? You know, this is kind of a normal conversation. Hey, let's consider homeschooling.
Yeah, throw it in the mix. Do research.
Yeah. And there's not much out there, though. I think that because it can be done in so many different ways, a lot of people, it can be quite religious homeschooling communities. And I think there's a lot more unschoolers now who aren't necessarily religious based and are just living and teaching their kids, well, allowing their kids to learn in a different way. And it's amazing. It's been so good for our family. It was such a blessing in disguise.
And three years on,
I can never imagine ever going back into the school system. Now that I'm looking at it from the outside in, I just can't imagine doing it.
I hope that people, like you said, as simple as we're going to research the local school, we're going to research the local private school, we're going to research homeschooling and unschooling, and just see and just find out whether it's a possibility. And, you know, I totally understand that it's not for a lot of families, and that's cool, but it would be great if the government would be able to financially just pop that money that was going to the schools.
Wouldn't it?
Even if it was just purely for textbooks and online resources. Like,
yes.
Like you said, just to throw it in the mix to even consider, because I think there's so many other families out there that would benefit the same or more than school, and I just wish people knew more about the benefits.
Absolutely. And I see it all the time, and I do see a lot of confusion on these online groups on Facebook where parents are saying, oh, I think, you know, my child's been bullied, I want to pull them out of school, but how do I homeschool? You know, what curriculum do I choose? There's thousands of them. Well, you can choose a curriculum, and you actually do have thousands of curriculums to choose from. You don't have to do one curriculum that the Australian Education Department has given us. No, you can choose whatever you want, and you don't even need to choose a curriculum.
Yeah,
you can just
exactly.
Do it however you want. And there's a lot of putting faith in the process, I must admit. And and until you start seeing it happen. Once you start living it, I really, you know, I don't know a lot of people believe it until they see it happening, and that means taking a big leap of faith, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I think, again, having these conversations and meeting other children that are being homeschooled and realise, they can read, they can write, they are socially literate, you know, that helps. So go out, go and join an unschooling group for a couple of weeks and see if you can find a fit and just give it a go, because nothing's permanent, school or unschooling. You know, you can always change your mind.
That's right, exactly, isn't it? You can always change your mind.
So good. What a perfect way to end that, I think. That's a really just a – the flexibility to it, and nothing's permanent. So, Lisa, where can we find out more about you and your trip?
Okay, so I do have an Instagram page called Learning on the Road.
Beautiful. I'll put this in the show notes.
If it inspires somebody else to pick up and travel and travel Australia with their kids, a lot of people, a lot of homeschoolers, in fact, the majority, are mums at home with their children and husband working. I'm not saying all. There's a lot of people that have, shared, they, you know, the work.
Yeah, but it is the majority.
It is the majority, isn't it? Mm-hmm. So there are a lot out there and, and people, who doesn't love traveling and going on holidays, and you can do it really cheaply. So if it can just inspire some people to go out and travel, then great. So I'd be happy.
Amazing. And we'll also link your article on KidSpot in the show notes as well.
Okay.
Amazing. Thank you so much for joining us, Lisa. It's been really fabulous chatting. It feels like we've known each other for years. I can't wait to meet either here or next time we're in Adelaide, hopefully, and have our kids
I might make it over there first. I've got something in the pipeline. So,
perfect. Come on up.
I might see you around September. We'll see how it all goes.
Excellent. Yeah. So we'll say see you for now, but thanks so much. Check out Lisa at Learning on the Road, and until then, stay wild. I hope you enjoyed listening to Lisa and her kids' story of road schooling all through the outback of South Australia. It really is something. If you haven't got there, look, this time during COVID when we can't go anywhere else, now is the time to hit the road and take those kids, particularly if you're homeschooling. You know, there's so much to be learned on the road that we just can't do in the classroom. So have a go, have a crack, be brave, learn some new skills and make some memories. Before you go, we would absolutely love it if you could hit subscribe on our podcast, or if you could share it to a friend, or if you'd just like to share on your socials. Getting our podcast out to more parents means that we get more children feeling like they're being seen and heard and respected. So thank you for passing on the message, and thank you for helping our children be respected. We really appreciate it. Until next week, stay wild.